Hello and welcome to the Worn and Wound podcast. My name is Blake Bettner. We are back in studio. I am joined with Zach Weiss. Hello, Zach. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Zach Kazan. Zach Kazan, hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Real well. And I'm also really excited about our guest today. He's a friend of ours. We've known him for a while. He's got a new brand that we're all pretty excited about. His name is Jerome Berger, and he is of Serica Watches. Jerome, welcome to the Worn and Wound podcast. Thank you for being here.
Hello, guy. Thank you very much for having me here today and for having this this opportunity to talk Serica with you. We've been knowing each other for a while now, indeed, and we've been chit-chatting about discussing the brand and what we're trying to achieve here a couple of times as well. And you guys have been really helpful helping us and reviewing the watch, and it played an important part, indeed, in getting us on the map, let's say that. So if we can reach a broad audience today and make them understand what we're trying to achieve and the reasons why and why we're doing all this, then I'd like that very much.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's something we've been excited about, and we've really enjoyed the watches. And yeah, hopefully this will get you some exposure. I know, like, our moms listen, maybe a couple of other people.
My mom does not listen to the podcast. Once in a while.
No, it's been a lot of fun watching Serica this year and late last year. Before we get into that, I guess we can do a little bit of a wrist check here. That's something that we do on these things, right? So Jerome, let's start with you. What are you wearing?
Like, very surprisingly, I'm wearing the only pre-series prototype of the Serica 5303 right here with a black dial.
Ah, beautiful.
And the winding crown at 9 o'clock. And right now I'm the only one wearing it, but hopefully in the next few weeks, let's say in about a month, we'll be able to ship the series pieces. And I'm very excited about that, because if we are building those pieces, is definitely to share them and to see them on the wrists. Mm-hmm. So yeah, very exciting about that.
Yeah, awesome. Very cool. We love that watch. Zach Kazan, what do you got on your wrist?
Thanks. I'm wearing a new acquisition for me, the Anodyne Model 1 Precious Metal Series.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
White gold galvanized dial. I picked this up at the recently completed wind-up pop-up shop about a week ago, and really enjoying it. It's a great watch. I've wanted to own a Anodyne for a long time, and this seemed like the right opportunity.
Awesome. Congrats on that new pickup, and we will pour one out for the Pelagos this weekend, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
It's off to a good home.
Yeah.
Do you think there'll be a third Pelagos in your future?
Yeah.
What's that?
A third Pelagos, perhaps? You'll return once again. Is it the boomerang watch?
Stranger things have happened. It's not out of the realm of possibility, I suppose.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah. Zach Weiss, what are you wearing?
I found my trusty Seiko SPB 149.
Nice.
Which I just, I don't know, just realized I haven't been wearing enough. This is a good example of a watch. You know, I got this watch, like a year ago, and I was like, that's it. Don't want any more watches. And now other watches have entered my collection, and now I don't wear it enough. So
Yeah. Today every time I see one of those pop up for sale, I'm like tempted for a brief minute, because I love that dial. Josh, what do you got on over there?
I have my Timex Root Beer, or Timex Q reissue Root Beer Edition. Courtesy of my friends at the wind-up shop.
Yeah, no, very cool. I love that watch.
Definitely my favorite watch of my collection right now.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. I'm wearing also my latest acquisition. This is the Ming 1709, done in collaboration with Messina Lab. The hands are just fine. Before you ask, we have been getting a lot of flack. I posted this on Instagram, and somebody was like, you know, can you believe all the troubles? Is yours broken? Are the hands? I said, yep, it's just fine. And then like a whole bunch of other commenters come in and are like, can you believe this? What can you? I don't know. It ruffled a few feathers, but mine is just fine. I'm not.
It pissed people off that yours doesn't have.
That mine does not have a problem. Yeah, I'm sorry. Look, he asked if mine worked. I said it did just fine. And that's about the end of that. I'm not associated with Ming at all. I have nothing to do with their QC or anything like that. But I think the watch overall is really beautiful. I've got it on this strap. Is this a secret strap? Are we allowed to talk about
No,
this?
You can talk about it. It just doesn't exist yet.
I don't even know what
yet.
It's called.
So that will be, so that's one of our Hoyt Italian-made straps.
Yeah.
in gray, and I honestly forgot what we're going to be naming that gray, but It is written down somewhere.
Well, it works real well with the...
It looks really good. I was eyeing it earlier. Looks really good, especially with that.
Yeah, it does. Jerome, do you pay attention to other kind of like small brands and what they're doing out there? Is there anyone that like really excites you out there?
Anyone trying to do something right, something I like, obviously, it's something to get excited about because there are so many things to do, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, many, many, many guys out there are trying to do good stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not always the bigger ones.
It's the hand thing. It brings up kind of an interesting thing, and I guess we can kind of start there because you're a small brand that's just kind of started, and you know how you handle QC issues, potential customer service issues, or even in the long term, I think more people are starting to think about these watches as like, hey, this is a watch I want to keep for potentially the rest of my life. I want to make sure that I'm going to be able to service it and have it fixed if it breaks or anything like that. 5, 10, 15 years down the road. How do you factor that into the watches that you create?
To get started, we produce what I call tool watches, rugged, robust, reliable watches. And for a watch to be reliable, then you cannot go with a fancy movement, right? You got to go with the workhorse, with something reliable, something that's been here for many, many years. And that basically any watchmaker around the world won't have any issue servicing because getting parts is an easy thing to do. And because the architecture is rather simple, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the caliber we choose to work with. And obviously we stock parts. We try to open counters like abroad, obviously, because dealing with customs, sending the watches back to France or Switzerland every time in the long run, it's not ideal, obviously. So we work with guys in New York, in Australia for now, and in Europe, obviously, we can take care of it ourselves. But short term, I'd like to open more counters and more partnerships with trusted watchmakers out there who I know can take great care of our watches. Mm. That's the idea.
Yeah. And that's so the 4512 that uses an ETA 2801 or is it 2824?
No, the very first reference we produced was using the ETA 2801, but with the 4512, we switched to the STP 111.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Which works fine, which you know pretty well, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I'm familiar with all these, you know, not to jump ahead or around.
And for later production of the 4512, we may go with, because while working with the 5303, we got closer to Soprod as well, who produces a Newton caliber.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are great, really. I mean, all the work and all the love they put in the calibers, it shows and it works.
Mm-hmm.
So we might even put the PO24 by Soprod in the newer 4512.
Oh, interesting.
So I was just going to ask this is the first time we've seen the Soprod, and you were mentioning the movements, but you know, you're talking about reliability and everything. So like, why did you choose the Newton? What interests you about it? Like, why are you, you know, it seems like a risk a little bit, even though Soprod's a no brand, but it's a new, you know, new caliber.
Yes and no. I can tell you the whole story behind, and even the whole story behind the Newton caliber. The thing is, you know, Soprod belongs to Miguel Rodriguez, which is the owner and founder of the Festina Group. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he bought Soprod a while ago. And since the very beginning, he had in mind to produce a true manufacturer movement. Now, talking about manufacturer movements, it's been marketed way too much since the early 2000s, right, to differentiate brands one from each other. But when manufacturing a Swiss caliber is basically like manufacturing a Swiss watch, it means, for example, a certain percentage of the value added of the watch is made in Switzerland. And if it respects that, then you can get the label and the watch is Swiss made. Basically, that's it. But it doesn't necessarily mean that everything is made in Switzerland, and it may not be a problem. But what Miguel had in mind when working on the Newton was to produce a true manufacturer caliber, meaning to vertically integrate the complete manufacturing process, right? And so this can be very risky if you start from scratch, because we all know checking the reliability of a caliber, it takes hundreds of millions of euros. It takes 10, 20, 30 years, because you need feedback. You need to know how it behaves to reduce the tolerance, to fix issues if there, if ever there are issues. And it takes time. But he was smart enough not to start from scratch, but to work on a caliber that was produced by Francais Bosch. You've heard about Francais Bosch, maybe, or not? Francais Bosch was the ETA of Besançon when France was great as watchmaking. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And this caliber, this architecture has been used, has been produced, this caliber, since the late 60s, at over 26 million pieces of this caliber was produced. So it's not a new caliber per se. It's just been remade with a newer and modern manufacturing process. And man, I can tell you, I had it on the wrist for the past 6 months. It's so reliable. And most of all, it's also using what seduced me as well in this caliber, that it uses the very same cross-through balance bridge, the same one that you can find on Rolex, for example. And when we know that the balance spring and wheel are the most sensitive parts of the movements, having this extra safety net to protect it, to avoid the axe to go sideways when bumped or when an unfortunate thing is happening to your watch, then it it really made me want to know more. And when digging more, I have to say, trying it and learning more about how they came to it, and visiting the guys in Switzerland at the factory, just like, I was sold. I was sold.
Is this the first like commercially available product using this movement?
No, there are a few. A few others, and even bigger brands that don't mention it, but they use it as a base, obviously, and I can't mention them. But
yeah, sure. Because, it's really.
I promised I won't.
It's really interesting. I didn't know that about the Francais Bosch, that this was based on, a movement that had previously existed. Movement brands known for their like great websites. So digging into it, you see a couple highlights about reliability and shockproof and trying to make it competitive in price and Swiss made, but really nothing about the development of it. So that's fascinating. Thank you for sharing.
Even the catalog is not up to date. So, but I have them invest in movements than web design, basically. So I'm fine with that.
It's understandable.
sure. No, that's great. Is this something that it seems like a good relationship that you're developing with them? Do you think about like what kind of complications that this might open up for future releases? It seems like you've got your second model out now in as little as, well, I guess within a year, right? The 4512 came out inside of the
last year. So, yeah. But it's coming out right now, but we've been working on the dive watch for over 3 years, basically.
Yeah.
I started drawing this watch 3 years ago, and I came back to it, and then obviously production and finding solutions to what I wanted, it took a long time. I often say just having the bezel action I wanted with the sound I wanted, it took us a year because it was never good enough, and I want to take the necessary time to have something that I like, that I'm proud to wear, and that I'm happy to sell my best friends and my family, right? So as long as it's not up to my standards, it's not out there. And some guys at production, they were going crazy. And hopefully we have a good relationships as well. So the guys were going like, dude, if it wasn't for you, I would have given up a long time ago, considering what you asked me. But seeing the watch right now on my wrist and listening to that click, which is firm and smooth. Zach, you've tried.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I'm very happy with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important part, because when you interact with your watch, whether we're talking about the crown, we're talking about the bezel, I don't know, if you're not comfortable or if it feels like, like something a bit chunky or clingy, or it's not what you want, it's not how you want to feel when you use your watch. But if it feels and sound like a Swiss safe, then we have something here.
So go ahead.
Oh, no, I have a question that's going to divert in a different direction. So if you,
the design of this watch, I think is so interesting. Of the dive watch, and I just kind of wanted to ask about your sources of inspiration for this, because it looks kind of familiar, but at the same time, like not. Like it looks very much like its own thing.
And that's the tricky thing to do when you design a watch, and especially a dive watch. Like building one watch, so the first 4512, for example, is one thing, because you're building a watch and building a brand are two very different things. So when you start with the first watch of the brand, basically you can go anywhere you want because no one is expecting something. When you design and when you develop the second watch, then it's, especially when it's a dive watch, it's even trickier. It's trickier because it's not your first watch anymore. So if you want to build something relevant, then you have to build your own design language that goes across both watches, especially considering that we do not put our name real big on the dials, right? So it needs to be to speak loudly, but subtly, yeah. If that makes sense. And secondly, because, well, we all seen so many dive watches out there. It's a watch that we all love, obviously. I could say the king of watches, because it packs so much emotion. It calls for adventure. It calls for James Bond. It calls for like all those guys that we wanted to be when we were kids, that we're still trying to be somehow. And we did not invent the codes of the dive watch, right? Those big guys killed the game back in 1953. I'm talking Rolex, Zodiac, Blancpain, obviously Omega, not too far ahead. And so we did not invent those codes, but we have to play with them. I'm talking about the rotating bezel. I'm talking about the large hands. I'm talking about the glowing large indexes. But in the same time, while designing such a watch, I wanted to build a Serica, not a Rolex clone or not a homage to anything done before. So it's finding the right balance and being guided by those red flags, you know. It's like, oh, I love that. And then red flag telling you, you love that, that's not you, that's Rolex. That's their design language. That's too easily and too strongly linked or identified with them. So you cannot do that. So you go somewhere else. And evolving and building up the watch using that strategy, it led me to this one. So I wanted the twin scale bezel. I wanted a unique stainless steel bracelet as well. I wanted something, as all of our watches, something that is obviously a sports watch, but that can transition very nicely and very smoothly, seamlessly into super elegant environment. And that's what we've been trying to convey with our Instagram post and our communication. You know, like for the diver, for example, and Zach, you pointed it out, not everyone is wearing an off-white suit to go to the swimming pool, obviously. But the contrast between the neoprene mm-hmm. black wetsuit, to me, the perfect contrast and the opposite would have been the off-white suit. And in both cases, it works. But it doesn't work because we're copying something that's been done before. It's more that I've been trying to put myself into the same state of mind, I would say, creatively. You know, like doing a watch that works is not, if you want to try to build something as good as those guys did when they created magic, basically when they invented the first dive watches. It's not about just coming up with a sapphire crystal that it's super domed and replicate the shape of a plexi crystal. It's not about going with yellow indexes. It's not about just manufacturing a watch that's slightly smaller. I think it's a much longer process than that, and it's about trying to find the right proportions and trying to play with those codes, but without mimicking or copying anything that's been done before. And we might think, of course, it's tricky because we're working on at a very small scale, right? You got to play with all those components and all those parts in less than 4 centimeter, it's less than 40 millimeter wide. But considering that every tenth of a millimeter, every hundredth of a millimeter does change everything, then I would say that your field of action is actually rather wide. And even in 2021, building a dive watch, which is round, which comes with a black dial, a rotating bezel and glowing indexes, I think it's still possible if you try hard enough to come up with something different, at least something that has a different flavor, right? That is not just a copy of what's been done before. And that was very, very important to me and will always is. Mm-hmm. For any later Serica model reference that will be released in the future, it has to be a Serica first and foremost before anything else. Of course, we did not invent those codes we're trying to play with, and because we want to find warmth and we want to feel good. I mean, why else are we checking at our wrist so often? Definitely not to check time, right? So we want to feel good, and that's I think what design can bring. And if we as the watch manufacturers are not trying to be generous in design and to give as much as we can to make us and everyone who's going to support us happy when they check the time, then what are we good for? Then what are we doing? We've been trying to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. No, it comes through. The watch feels like a breath of fresh air, I think, if, especially when you consider it. I think when you hear the term dive watch, your head is kind of primed for those, the kind of classics, right?
You see a sub, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. Like, it's just default. And the fact that it, like, it doesn't go in that direction, it kind of immediately is like, jarring. It takes you out of that. But we talk a lot about watches now that don't really adhere strictly to the genre that they're maybe assigned to, and how that's a really good thing, and how a lot of brands are kind of trying to find watches that aren't so, like, this is built for this one specific purpose and it can do it really, really well. But, you know, it's built, you know, with inspiration to this, but we want you to be able to use it with, like, you know, whatever you do, you know, taking your kid to baseball practice or doing the groceries and more, like, whatever it is, it's a watch that you can have with you while you're doing the things that, you know, comprise your everyday life, which makes it more valuable, right? Because then you're building up those experiences in that watch. And that's one of the things I like about this watch, is the proportionality of it. And it was the same with the 4512. It seemed very well considered, right? Like, it fits very nicely inside the confines of the wrist. And it doesn't get in the way, but at the same time, like, it doesn't really look like you think it's going to look. It's just a really great experience on the wrist, I found.
That's something else that really matters to me, that many guys talk about the Daily Beater watch, you know what I mean? And it comes opposite to the nice watch, the dress watch, the lovely watch, and the beater, basically. And many guys will wear the Daily Beater every day, all year long, and maybe have this lovely horlogerie piece. They're going to put it on their wrist once a year at New Year, having a cigar with their mates in the living room. But at the end of the day, and by the end of the day, I mean by the end of our lives, what watch will be your watch? One will be packed with memories. Your family, your sons and daughters, your friends will have seen you wearing that watch every day for so many years, and not the other one. So there isn't any more noble task than being a daily watch for a mechanical watch, I'd say, because it means that that's the one you've been choosing day after day to rock on your wrist. That's the one that have seen the most, the best, the worst of your life. Yep. And at the end of this day, then that's your watch. That's the one. And having to choose between, let's say, a nice watch and a, you know what I mean? Like, wearing a watch because you can, or wearing a watch because you want to, are two very different things. And we've been trying to pack both those aspects in our watches. Something that performs well, obviously, that is rugged, so something that you can wear no matter what you do, how you dress, or where life takes you. And also something you want to wear, because having to choose between a Patek and a Casio doesn't really do it for me.
Sure. Naturally.
shouldn't be, right?
Yeah. Take us in your other direction.
Okay, my other direction, because I realized we kind of, like, just dove right into the weeds
we
with customer service and calibers, and I just realized, what did you do before you made watches?
What did I do before? Oh, that's a long story, but I tried to be short here. For the past 5-6 years, I've been a journalist, just like you guys. I've been based in Paris and being the managing editor of Les Rabilleurs, which is a French magazine talking about watches. And doing that, obviously, I've had the chance to be able to see and have on the wrist and have hands-on the most beautiful watches in the world, should it be modern or vintage. Because when you deal with those guys from the auction houses, when you deal with vintage yourself, you have the luck and the chance to approach those pieces from close, and that definitely helps building an eye for watches. Before that, I used to be a photographer. I used to work in electronics marketing for Panasonic in Japan. I used to work in hospitality, running hotels in the south of France. So yeah, I've been traveling my fair share, and I loved it, and everything came together here right now building Serica. But it's you know, I've always been into watches. I was born in Alsace, which is basically on the Swiss border. And since I was 14, I would go to those flea markets in Switzerland. to try to find PCs and meeting Philippe Dufour, for example, and those guys with my mates from childhood. Great times, obviously, and I understand now that is not something that everybody is able to do. But watchmaking has never been my job, my daily job, until 5-6 years ago. So first on the media side, telling stories and reviewing others' watches, which was great, obviously. Then I've been slowly stepping into watch design, but mostly being consulted for, for design improvements. So basically a new dial, how to improve a product, but without ever the complete possibility of designing it from A to Z. And which was at some point a little frustrating. Mm-hmm. So a few years ago, when basically I found myself with my future associate and another friend, Matt Ranek, that I think you guys know as well, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
You know Matt pretty well.
Yep.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast.
And another friend. So basically the Swiss, the American, and the Frenchies back in Geneva were chit-chatting and discussing watches. And we suddenly realized as customers, not as journalists, that what we wanted to buy, what we would like to see, we could not afford it. I mean, give me 20 grand and I go buy an 1815 chronograph from Lange and I'm a happy man, but I do not have those 20 grand. So what I've been thinking was, but where are those watches? Basically, I wanted to buy an old Sub or an old Speedmaster, but new. But the story goes that those pieces nowadays, even if they retain the classic designs and the quality of the old ones, they became what people usually call luxury watches, which I don't like the term, because a watch should always be quality. And, you know, luxury means quality craftsmanship. Mm-hmm. But here it turns into luxury because it's expensive. And when a watch costs 7, 8, 10 grand, then it's just not something that most people can afford. And I would go as far as to say that it's not even something that you, especially right now in Paris, you know, you don't behave the same with a 10 grand watch on your wrist, basically. Mm-hmm. And especially right now in Paris, I mean, wearing a watch that is way too easily identifiable, it becomes scary dangerous. I mean, people stop wearing Rolexes and Patek in Paris because it became a nightmare. It's way too dangerous and it's way too much money. But on the other hand, as we said before, I don't want to rock a plastic watch for the rest of my life because I can. So it was like bringing back those sports watches that were great, not only because they were affordable and rugged, obviously, but because I will go back to those two examples. I mean, the military watches, the old Sub, the old Speedmaster, and so many other watches. But I take those examples because everybody knows what it looks like. Those watches were great watches because they were reliable and everything we said, yes. But when you took those watches out of the primary designed environment, meaning handling vibrations on a race field for the Speedmaster, for example, going underwater for the Sub, then it remained very beautiful objects that you could wear into any situation. Because of the proportions, because of the fit and finish, because of the uniqueness of their designs, and that's what we want. The idea was here in my head too, that oh man, I think I know how to do it, and I want to do it. Mm. And once the inception was in, like in this movie, it was hard not to start working and working pretty hard to make it happen, for sure.
Very cool,
Jerome. I'm wondering,
are the boys too with us?
With the how have your impressions of the watch industry changed, having worked as a journalist in the industry and now being kind of on the other side of that equation? Have your thoughts about the watch business shifted at all?
Yeah. Yes and no. I know now more than ever how we all strive to build what we believe in. Mm-hmm. And obviously we don't all take the same path. I know I'm not trying to do like everybody else, of course, because that's never a good idea, basically. So obviously I cannot fight using the same tools and the same weapons as all major historic brands now backed up by luxury groups. I can't do crazy marketing. I can't have the same. I can't speak just as loud, obviously. But what I can do is to bring fresh new designs. I can strive to the best possible quality, and I can tell you when you see that watch, and when you wear it, it doesn't blush in front of anyone else. And what I can do is call my clients, because when you scale up way too much, you lose contact and you lose touch with the final customer, and that's something that I don't want to. So I think today the assets we have as well, and it's because we're small and we're very confidential as well, and our production is rather small, same. But I really enjoy, you know, when someone has a problem with the watch or wants to see the watch or has a question, I mean, give me a call, or I call them directly and we have a quick chat. And if they have an issue, I'm here to fix it. I stand behind my products. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. And step by step, we're going to build trust and we're going to build a reputation, I hope, because by doing good things again and again and again in the long run. You know, nothing was built in a day. I mean, Rome wasn't, Rolex wasn't, and Serica won't neither. So we have time and we will take this time, one step at a time, to build what we believe in. And what we believe in is bringing back more interesting mechanical watches that I think, that I know, can make someone happy for a very, very long time. And that's the idea. But back to your question, because I lost myself a bit, maybe. Did my vision of watchmaking, of the industry, changed now I'm on the other side? Yes and no, because when you're a journalist, you know very many people working on the other side. So your vision is rather accurate, right? You may just learn a bit better, and sometimes the hard way, that production can be a nightmare.
Yeah,
I did not know before. Yeah. Because when I draw something, obviously it's always possible, right, on paper. Then I switch to the computer design and, it's still possible. And then production comes in and they say, dude, what you design here is just like, doesn't work. And then we need to find solutions. And that's what design is as well. I mean, solutions to solve issues. You know, it can be an issue. I mean, the very basic thing, I need to tell time. It needs to be precise. It needs to be easy to read. It needs to be comfortable on the wrist. I mean, all those specifications that they go without saying. But then when you dive deep into the production side, then more problems arise that can be solved with design all the time. But it means like going to the other side is taking a deep dive into what the watch truly is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd say that.
No, that's interesting. So it sounds like you are laying the foundation for a brand that you want to be around for a very long time. Obviously, you mentioned that that this dive watch is something you've been working on for years now. How many watches do you have in the pipeline right now? And when what's going on? what's the next 5, 10 years look like for Serica?
10 years. I mean, the idea in the next 10 years would be for Serica to be able to give shape to our vision on different types of watches. We came up, the first watch was the 300 stainless steel, water resistant to 200 meters. Well, we did it. We gave shape to this one. Then the dive watch, which is different, obviously. Then, I don't know, maybe a chronograph, a GMT, a dress watch, a ladies watch. You know, what we want to build here is a narrow lineup of a few watches, sports watches, but always, hopefully, that can remain in the collection for many, many years without the need to change it. Mm. Because obviously, when you start and when you build a brand, if you come up with a new model and with 50 dial variations every year, then how can you ask people to have a clear vision of who you are? It's just not possible. So we're going to do it slowly, and we're going to take the necessary time to do it right, I hope. And maybe 10 years, in 20 years, we can sit down all together and laugh, I hope.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think that's interesting. So do you think that, you know, for instance, the Submariner Rolex comes back to maybe every 10 or 15 years and makes a couple subtle changes. The watches that you're producing now, do you think, like, you know, these are watches that I want to consistently produce and, you know, when the time's right, maybe a decade, I'll come back to it and make a few tweaks?
Absolutely. And as soon as I will see something that I know I can improve, either make it, like, I don't know, more comfortable, more beautiful, easier to read, more precise, more reliable, then we will. And that's the very reason why when we saw the first batch of watches we produced, you know, the wristwatch waterproof, the very first one, we sold it. I could have just pushed the button and produced the same run of watches, just another batch, very easy. But by wearing the watch, by having the feedbacks from all the clients and customers and everything, I realized that there was a few things that I wanted to improve and that I could improve. And so I went back to work again, and it might be seen as subtle changes from the wristwatch waterproof to the 4512, but let me tell you, it was a complete new development because just switching from mineral to sapphire crystal, not the same thing. Improving the water resistance to 200 meters, not the same thing. You need extra gaskets, you need new construction, and it changes basically everything of your initial design. Maybe not on the outside, but on the inside. And that's a whole new development, basically. But when you see it from the outside, the first watch and the second watch, they look pretty similar, right?
Yeah.
And that's also what I want, because for somebody who buys a Serica in 2020, I don't want them in 2021 to, ooh, I got the old one. No, you got a Serica in 2020. We're in 2035 and you still have a Serica. It still looks the same. It's still obviously not exactly the same. Hopefully watches in 2035 will be even better. Mm-hmm. But I want our customers to feel good and to feel comfortable about wearing older watches, older Serica watches. And I think that's important by not going crazy in design and going all over the place within 2 or 3 years. Because a watch is not a t-shirt, it's not fashion. There is no seasonality in watchmaking anyway. And you know, I mean, I think what really hurt watchmaking in the past 20 to 30 years is, the imposed creativity rhythm. And it was also imposed by trade fair shows as well. But when you have Geneva and Basel coming back every year and people expecting to see novelties every year, you're not supposed to purchase a new watch every year. So why do you feel the need to have new things? And year after year, decade after decade, I mean, even watchmakers and it's normal. Like creativity just faded a bit and you end up showing up with just the same watch with a new dial collar, with a new hand, with a new thing that, oh, it was not ready, but you know, we need novelties. I don't know how it works because I haven't been there, obviously, behind the curtain. But I think taking the time and the necessary time by not going all over the place too soon, it's crucial.
Yeah.
Definitely. Do you think in those regards then for your brand, you'll rather than kind of making your press moments just about releases, will you be doubling back on marketing efforts, storytelling, kind of revisiting designs? Because, you know, I feel like that's part of the challenge and that a lot of brands seek, you know, experience it. They release a watch one year, a year and a half later, what do they do with it? So some may bring
green
out
dial.
A new color, yeah, green dial, and, you know, exactly. we might write about it, we might not. But it's also a challenge for them to say, well, we did some weird event with it. Like, that's something I think brands are learning, particularly this new breed of, you know, smaller independent brands that I think are kind of seeing these challenges and pushing, you know, and so I'm just curious if you have a bit of a strategy for that. Yeah.
No, of course I'd like to communicate more, and but communicate more for good reasons, you know, to say, hi, I'm here. And the message won't be, I have a new dial variation to show you. It'll be, we're still here. We're still trying to bring you the same watch and for those good reasons, you know. Some, I don't know, like we've seen lately, and you've seen most than anyone else, many brands coming up with limited editions, which I have nothing against limited edition, but it's a bit, to me, it says a little bit like, buy it now because it's limited and tomorrow it will be gone. So it sounds a bit too loudly like driving sales in an artificial way. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to buy our watches because they need to rush because tomorrow they won't be. I'd rather communicate to let them know why we do it and how, and make them understand how our watches can be a good choice and for them. Then buying a Sericare watch will be an educated purchase. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Buying a watch is not something you do every day. And we build and we manufacture watches, hopefully to potentially last a lifetime. And when you buy this object that has a power that very few objects have, you know, to become part of yourself, to connect you with people you love most, whether they're still here or they're gone, then it must not be something that's taken lightly. It must be something that's been thought, a thoughtful purchase, basically. And once you know the good reasons why you're choosing this one over another, and once you know this is your watch, then wearing it and checking the time on it will come with better flavor, I think, and hopefully for a long time.
So have you had any issues kind of balancing the production and against the demand that you're experiencing for some of your new watches? I see you've maybe spread some of the batches out in terms of the expected delivery dates and things like that, but it's not like you have a hard cap on production at all.
Yeah, because we always want to, I'm always playing it very tight on the schedule because I want those watches out. I want those watches on the wrists as soon as possible. True story is we have a little margin, but obviously this margin always disappears very, very easily because of the situation, because of COVID, because of production simply. But we're still on time. Like we said, late August is going to be early September. It's still something that's I think works. And most of all, when we're doing all the effort to bring this product to life, I think it works both ways. And not only, I don't want to say that waiting is part of the process, but it is. Because waiting for a watch is a customer effort to support us. And I appreciate that very much.
That's what I was trying to tell you. The journey is the, is the story, you know, is the fun, right? Like getting there.
Exactly. And the example I take always, and that's very, I think it's powerful. When we were kids, the best time was the week before Christmas, the time before Christmas, not Christmas itself, right? I mean, you build up all the expectations, all the gifts, what you want, what you're going to get. You're trying to guess. You're super excited. There's just like the music. There is the weather. There is a family coming together. And once Christmas is here, you just like unwrap the gifts and the next day it's back to school. Basically, Christmas Day was never the best day. And I think all the waiting and the desiring, the excitement coming up with Christmas, before Christmas, was always the best part. And so it goes for watches as well.
That's very true. You definitely wait on a watch and you think you're the next day, it's like, oh man, I'm a new person.
Yeah.
But no. Got to get back on the subway.
Stepping into my new life.
Yeah.
With my new circle.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I think it takes, the watch takes way more value, you know? If you discover it on a Monday and you have it on your wrist on a Tuesday, you're like, oh, okay, it's just another watch. And I've seen something, I wanted it, I got it, fine. But you do your homework, you dig it, you discover it, you order it, you have to wait for it. You go back to the website, you learn some new things. Maybe you listen to podcasts, and you go back to the website, you check some more pictures, and you get a better, much better understanding of what the watch is and what's behind. And then when the watch arrives, it has way more value, definitely. Mm. I mean, and the same goes for many, many things. I could go on for days you want a suit or a shirt or whatever. You go to the shop and you grab it, or you design it, or you go to a tailor. And you go through the process and you wait. And when it comes, not only does it fit better, but man, it's something else.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about a similar idea to that on the podcast a few weeks ago. We talked about the idea of Grail watches and how the term Grail is kind of, I think, a little bit overused in today's, you know, watch dialogue, but there's something.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion, I'm on record. I think it's way overused, but there's something really satisfying about, learning about something and that anticipation for it makes owning it, you know, significantly better. And you're right, whether it's a watch or some, you know, any other object that you, you know, that you, that you can study and kind of like pore over the details of, and that is like not easy to acquire, but once you do acquire it, it's like a, it becomes an event. And I think that kind of reduces some of the anticlimactic nature of, you know, mm-hmm. wanting a watch really suddenly and then having it on your doorstep the next day, which I think is something watch collectors have, you know, experienced, and you kind of learn the hard way that that's not as satisfying. Yeah.
There is no like movie that, like, you know, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade Part Two, when they just have the Grail and they're just hanging out, you know. You never, you know, no one chills.
Just enjoying it.
Yeah, it's like nice cup.
It's like in next to the china on the thing. Yeah. Right.
Chasing it is the journey.
Definitely. Yeah. Do you pay attention to chatter about your watch on the forums and on Instagram? What's the reaction been like, and what's the experience of seeing it been like?
Well, we've been lucky enough to have good press, so obviously it helps. But you know, when you work real hard for many, many years, you have this idea in your head, you dream it, you design it, you draw it, and then all of, during this process, it's still yours, but once it's out there in the metal, it's not yours anymore.
Yeah.
And you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to be the reaction of the people. And when you have people dropping lines on your inbox every day telling you how much they love their watch and how much they've been waiting for such a watch and the pleasure they have wearing it on a daily basis, sometimes dropping some real, real big watches to the safe in order to wear the Serica, man, it's extremely rewarding, and it goes straight to my heart, really. It makes us feel real good about what we do, and gives us the energy and the motivation to keep going, for sure.
Yeah, I haven't really noticed any much in the way of negativity around any of these watches.
No, not really. Or sometimes, I mean, you have haters everywhere, but no, we've been lucky enough. I would not even say that we have haters. Yeah. We have some people sometimes asking questions in a harsh way.
Yeah.
And I pick up my phone, we have a chat, and they turn into friends. So
I like that approach. They just misunderstood, right? That's all.
Yeah, it's mostly exactly. That's what it was. It was not hating. It was just misunderstanding.
Yeah.
That's what it was most of the time.
Yeah.
Because you know, many people don't realize what's behind creating a watch brand and designing a watch. With today's tools like Instagram, the internet, and everything, you see beautiful pictures, you see a website that looks all right with beautiful pictures and drawings and everything. And then I'm here talking with you guys, and pictures on the watch, on Worn and Wound, in the US, in Australia, in Europe. And some people tend to forget that behind this are people, you know? And they sometimes get a little carried away because for them, it's a watch brand. It's not human anymore.
Mm.
But let me tell you, there are guys working 80 hours a week in order to make that happen. Guy that been spending sleepless night thinking about what was right, what was the right thing to do in order to give shape to those ideas. And when you pick up your phone, suddenly they tend to realize that, and they, oh, true.
Yeah.
Then the chat is not the same anymore.
Yeah, the world needs more a little rationality, especially the Instagram crowds. I feel like there's a need to amplify any drama with a few pieces of data that you kind of piece together, and it's like, you know,
exactly.
Listen to me.
It's very important to stay grounded. And,
And
the human contact and relationships we can have, it's the direct contact, it definitely helps.
Yeah, sure. Love it.
I don't do any of our customer service, but I know from our customer service that, like, usually those angry emails, once we get back to them and talk to them, they immediately become friendly emails, and they're kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, so harsh. And you know, it's sort of a natural reaction. People forget. And people definitely forget. There's people on the other side of everything.
And it's easy to understand. You know, we all get a little carried away sometimes. Maybe they had a shit day. And watches is their little safe haven, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Their hobby, where they can relax and everything. When it doesn't work and when it doesn't go well, obviously that's not what they're in the hobby into for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they can get a little overexcited. But then they get to talk to someone, and all of a sudden it gets better because we hear to listen to them, and we take their issue seriously, obviously, because when it's related to our products, then it's our problem. It's not only theirs.
Yeah, no, well said. So you've got your watch brand, but you've been into watches and around watches for a long time, as you mentioned. And I think that's how we've known you from Le Herbier. Apologies for the pronunciation on that. But do you still own your own? Do you still have a collection of your own watches that are not Serica watches that you're just going to keep?
Sure. I mean, I definitely. I mean, I don't wear them as much as before, obviously, because I mean, each time I put that on the wrist every morning, I giggle like a little kid, and it feels right. I still have those because I've loved those watches. Those are the watches that made me love watches, and I have many memories with them, and I probably could not afford them today if I sell them. So yeah, I was lucky enough to get into the game not too soon, but soon enough to be able to purchase my Grail watches at the time. Yeah. Meaning the old Sub, the old Speed, and a few vintage military chronographs that I really enjoy.
Sure.
And yeah, my watch box is, I mean, it's no surprise if I design functional, purpose-driven watches, because that's what I've always been attracted to. That's what makes my heart beat a little faster when I check the time, because those are watches that were never meant to be something they're not. They were not meant to be beautiful. They were meant to match a purpose, right?
Yeah.
They were meant to match specifications that were given by someone, I don't know. But by being so deeply, purposely driven, it makes them beautiful.
Yeah.
Just because they're so honest, it makes them authentic, not trying too hard to be anything else. And that's also what I strive to create with the Serica watches.
Yeah. Sure. This reminds me of Enzo Ferrari would say something like, we don't design cars to be beautiful. We design cars to win races. And then when they win races, they become beautiful.
Exactly. <In his mind. laughs> Very well said.
Well, great. So we've seen two releases in the past 12 months from you. Is this a pace that you think we'll be able to going to hold on to for the coming year? Or should we just kind of chill on expectations for new releases moving ahead?
No, if it's ready, it's ready. And I'd love to. I mean, if we can introduce the next Serica watch next year, and considering that I've been working on it for a few years already, I think maybe, hopefully, that will be possible. But again, it will be ready when it will be ready. And if it's not ready by this time, then it's going to have to wait.
Yeah.
And then hopefully we will have more 4512s and 5303 to share with the watch community.
Yeah. And I will have you know that somebody stopped by our pop-up shop this weekend and had a 4512 just in their collection.
Cool.
So it's the first that I've seen just out in the wild, just on somebody's wrist. So that was really awesome to see. Well, congratulations, Jerome, on the releases. You've got some big fans over here. I didn't review the 50.
Thanks, guys.
The 5303 because I bought one, and I didn't want to see. But so
And that was the best, man. Because when Blake, when you told me that, you know what. Considering that I bought a diver, maybe, well, Doug doesn't want me to be biased and everything, so he's going to do the review. And I was like, yeah, well, fair enough.
Yeah.
But hopefully he's going
to
like it.
I tried to buy the watch.
And then I read the review, and I was like, yeah, he liked it.
I tried to buy the watch after the review. You know, that's what happens to me.
I wasn't that patient. I was like, I like this, and I knew, and obviously, I like you, and I want to support what you guys are doing there at Serica. So,
thank you.
So keep up the amazing work, and we really appreciate you coming on today, Jerome.
Thanks, guys. Thank you very much for having me and for supporting us from the start. I really appreciate that. And you definitely played a big part in putting us on the map again. And that I won't forget.
All right. Well, it's been our pleasure. All right. And everyone out there, thank you for listening. We will see you next time. Bye.